You are listening to Preparing for the CAPM, Session 10 of the Sensible Project Manager Podcast. Today's session, Project Communication Management with Terry and Mark.
Welcome to the Sensible Project Manager Podcast at sensiblepm.com, where you get an insider's edge on practical project management. Now, here is your host, Mark Phillippe.
Welcome to this special edition of the Sensible Project Manager Podcast. My name is Mark Phillippe, and I am the Sensible Project Manager. This is Session 10 of the Mentoring Series, Preparing for the CAPM. Chapter 10 of the PMBOK covers Project Communication Management. With communication such an important part of project managers' time, in fact, it is indicated that about 85 to 90% of a project manager's time is in the form of communications. We are communicating with lots of different people, all the different stakeholders, team members, and management, and it's such an important part of project management. So listen up really well. If this is the first time that you have found the Sensible Project Manager podcast and or this series, make sure that you start at the beginning of the series. Go back to CAPM 1 for the introduction to project management. And you'll find that by going to sensiblepm.com/CAPM1. Start at the beginning and you'll be able to prepare well for either taking the CAPM or the PMP. Now today's notes you'll be able to find at sensiblepm.com/CAPM10. During these sessions, we study from the text of the fifth edition of the PMBOK, or the Project Management Book of Knowledge. As usual, so you can follow along, go get your PMBOK, and let's go to our session with Terry.
And now, today's feature.
Hello, Terry. We're back. We're talking today about project communications management. How you doing, Terry?
I'm great, Mark. How are you today?
Good.
Good.
Time is ticking.
I know, but I'm feeling great. I've been working hard, studying.
Good.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I'm committed.
You should see her. She has a scholarly hat on right now. Looks like she's about ready to flip that tassel to the other side. No. Yeah. So you're looking like you're feeling a little bit better on things.
I am. Now. I've been dedicating more time, so I'm feeling more at ease. Before, I just felt pressured, like I wasn't committed, I wasn't making enough time for it. Now that I've actually paid for the exam, and I know what date it's on, I'm committed.
And you don't want to pay for it
again. I don't want to pay for it again.
So, folks, I was telling Terry last week, after we got done with our recording last week, and I told her how I prepared for the PMP. I'm a procrastinator, and so I essentially I was studying and then doing it here and there, and finally I just locked myself in my room. Had my wife put food underneath the door. I just crammed and crammed until I was able to have to go. There was no other option. So, but anyway, good luck. You're getting there and you're looking happy.
I am. I'm happy.
All right. So let's get going on this. We're talking about communications management. And I will just warn you, I was telling Terry about this as well. If anybody from PMI is listening to this, I'm sorry, but I think this is a very weak chapter, but that's okay. We'll get through this. Because I think it's weak, I might have some opinions that I throw in here, and I'll try to separate those from from the actual
information. Commentary
here.
Today.
A little commentary. I guess it's just my mood that I'm in, I think.
Oh, dear.
I went fishing, and I'm lit up because I got skunked.
That sucks.
It was terrible.
Oh,
that's all right. We had fun fishing.
Good.
Okay, here we go. Let's get started. Could you read the first chapter? We're on page 287.
Project communications management includes the processes that are required to ensure timely and appropriate planning, collection, creation, distribution, storage, retrieval, management, control, monitoring, and the ultimate disposition of project information.
Wow. Then I love the next sentence. It says, project managers spend most of their time communicating with team members and other stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the areas that they actually made some changes since the previous PMBOK. They actually called out a number in the previous
PMBOK, I believe it was something like, it was somewhere between 80 and 90% that they referenced in their in communication. So a project manager, I guess one of the reasons why I'm a little disappointed about this is they didn't give us enough meat in this one. It was a little fluffy. Communications in general, I guess, can be a little fluffy in concepts, but I was hoping I would see a little bit more details as far as some examples and so forth, because a project manager spends so much time communication. And as referenced in previously, 80 to 90% of our job is in communications. And it's so important to be able to do that. I think it's such an acquired skill. Some things you're just born with as far as, you know, we learn how to communicate, but there's a difference between learning how to talk and how to really communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife tells me.
And she's right. Let me tell you.
So let's put perspective on this. We'll go back to our favorite chart on page 61. The knowledge area, again, for project communications management. It spans its processes over three different process groups. The planned communications management is in the planning process group.
Mm-hmm.
The manage communications under executing process group. And finally, the control communications is under the monitoring controlling process group, which you would kind of expect. And that was very similar to what we've seen the last few times. They're mostly spread out between planning, execution, and monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
Let's jump to page. We're going to go to page 289. Planned communications management, if you'd read that for us.
Planned communications management is the process of developing an appropriate approach and plan for project communications based on stakeholders' information needs and requirements and available organizational assets.
So it's just really putting together that plan. Once again, this one of the ways that I look at this is this could be a general plan that you might put together for how your organization does communication with projects.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is probably more specific in that each project is different and your communication needs might be different for each project because you have different stakeholders in each project. So you can put together a kind of a generic template or a plan that you would put together that gets tweaked each project. The inputs for this process is use the project management plan, stakeholder register, which we have not covered yet. We will cover that in a few chapters, enterprise environmental factors, and organizational process assets.
Mm-hmm.
And the outputs are the communications management plan and project document updates. So we'll actually cover a little bit more on the communications management plan a little bit. Well, let's jump to the tools and techniques as we have become accustomed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Page 291. The first one that they talk about is communication requirements analysis. And this says just the analysis of the communication requirements determines the information needs of the project stakeholders. So all you're doing with this tool or technique is that you're just trying to figure out what is the best way to communicate with the stakeholders on the project.
And how much communication do they expect to see?
Right. You don't want to over-communicate. You don't want to under-communicate. You want to be at the right level. That is really important to be able to make sure you understand your audience, and as in any communications, understand your audience so you can understand what they need, how they need to consume it.
Sure.
And so this analysis is for that. One thing that they talk about is if you think about how many stakeholders you have, how many different communications channels can there be if you have a number of stakeholders?
Mm-hmm.
So they've actually come up with an equation, and that is on page 292. So if you take the number of stakeholders times the number of stakeholders minus one, divided by two, and that will give you the number of potential communication channels. For instance, if you have 10 stakeholders, you would have 10 times 10 minus 1, which is 9. So 10 times 9 divided by 2 will give you 45 potential communication channels. Because there's so many channels that you might, and maybe we can step back on what would you describe the communication channels as?
Well, I think a channel is me to any one individual, me to the second individual, me to the third individual. So those are all channels. But then you also have to, the reason you get to 45 is because that number one individual also has a channel with number two and number three and number four and so on and so on. So it's just, I mean, if you kind of visualized it, it's a spider web of communication where arrows are going all over the place.
Exactly. And if you think about it, sometimes it's really hard, even if you have two people communicating. I might say something. You might hear something different,
yeah.
Even though the words haven't changed.
Right.
But you, because of the context in which you receive that information, it makes it difficult.
Sure.
For those people, the two people are communicating.
And so think about if your project had people from other cultures on it.
Exactly.
Or and, other languages.
Yes. And we will talk a little bit about that later on. But in fact, I had a guest on my podcast who talked about how culture really influences how we do projects.
Absolutely.
And that was very an interesting discussion. And talk about neuroscience and culture. So my head was spinning after that conversation.
I bet.
But it was a great Samad. You look it up on the podcast, and you'll see, if you look up Samad, I don't remember which episode it was, but we talked about neurocultural communication.
Cool.
So here we have 45, in this case, this example, out of 10 stakeholders, 45 different lines of communication or channels. That does, I guess, accent the challenge that you have when you start having communications within a project.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only, it's not just two people anymore, it's 45 different lines of communication.
And 80 to 90% of the project depends on it.
Exactly. Yeah, oh. That's why, again, I think that this is a little bit light. So you could probably spend lots of time reading books and so forth to learn how to become a better communicator.
Mm-hmm.
It also talks about, of the communications requirements analysis, the different ways that you might choose to communicate, or the requirements that might be there. You can use to figure out what requirements are for the team. Talks about organizational charts.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at the project organization, the stakeholders, different disciplines you might have, any logistics, internal information, external information needed. As you talked about, what kind of languages you might have. There's a number of different things that will influence your decision on what the requirements are on how you might communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Next one is the communication technology. And this is just talking about what is the means in which you're going to exchanging the information. Factors that might affect the choice of communications are urgency, for the need of the information, availability of technology, how available is the technology that you're going to use, ease of use of that technology or the communication method, project environment. What is that? And this goes to what you were talking about. What's your project environment like? Do you have multiple languages that are going to be required? Are you have different cultures that are going to be influencing the stakeholders or team members of the project?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be in a co-located environment, or you can have virtual environment? What all different time zones you have to consider? So if I'm talking to somebody, we're in the United States on the West Coast. If I have to talk to somebody from the East Coast, I've got to recognize that there's 3 hours difference between the two. Let alone if I'm talking to somebody in India or something like that. I have to recognize that that project environment is going to influence how the tools that I'm going to use in the communication method.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, they talk about the sensitivity and the confidentiality of the information.
Mm-hmm.
So some information cannot be distributed to everybody because of the confidentiality.
Sure.
Okay. Thoughts about that?
Well, you know, they call this section communication technology, but I don't see any mention of email. They don't talk about using email.
Well, I think that this is really, that because they're talking about how are you going to decide on what technology you're going to use. And again, this is in the planning portion of it. So they are, it's talking about what are the factors that are going to influence the decision. Now, the email will be a tool later on as you're actually executing the plan. Okay. So I think these were just talking about the influences. Yeah, but so some of the thought process on how they put this together again. Opinion, I think.
Yep, but. Opinion. Okay.
Okay, communication models. Now, they gave one basic communication model. There are probably number of them, but they chose to use one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And a communication model is just to help people understand how communication occurs. And here they talk about, they give the definition of two parties in a communication, a sender and a receiver, or somebody that is communicating something, some information to somebody else, is the sender. The receiver is the individual that's receiving the information. And then they talk about the medium in which that communication occurs.
The medium would be, is it on the phone? Is it in person? Is it a letter?
Yes. That's email. Whatever that means of transporting that communication. And then they talk about noise. Mm-hmm. Or any interferences. So if you and I are having a conversation, what kinds of things that might get in the way of that conversation? Are there other people that are trying to get into the conversation? Are there kids in the background that are taking up attention? Are there things that are happening in the environment around us? Those kinds of things are considered noise.
Mm-hmm.
The sequence of steps in a basic communication model is encode. That means you have to have there's some thoughts or ideas that need to be able to be encoded into a language by the sender. So I think it's a little bit complicated a way of saying it. All it is saying is that if I'm about ready to communicate something, I have to think through that. Mm-hmm. I have to figure out how to communicate that. That could be in their making it so that it encompasses anything, but it might be in the form of speech, language. It could be written word. It could be body language. Mm-hmm. It could be a number of different things, but you have to think through what it is that you're communicating.
I kind of think of encode like package. How am I going to package the message?
Yeah. Boy, you're sounding more and more like a geek.
I'm getting there. I know.
Okay. Transmit message. So then you have, then the next step that they talk about in this method is that you have to transmit that in some manner. So you're basically using whatever tool it is or the medium in which you're going to do that. And that's, like I mentioned, is it going to be speech? Is it going to be written? Whatever. The receiver then has to decode that communication.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have to take that message in, think about what it is that is being said or been written about. And that's what decode means.
Sure.
Acknowledge is, yes, I've received that information. So whether if we're talking, then I will usually need to, if I'm the sender, you as the receiver will decode that and then say something back to me acknowledging that you've received that and you understand.
Mm-hmm. But acknowledgement doesn't mean that you got it, that you understand what the message said. It just means I got it.
You're right. I've heard you.
Yeah, I heard you.
It's not a communication that I understand nor agree.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay, so an easy way to think about that is if I think about an email, you can put an acknowledge receipt.
A read receipt.
A read receipt on your email if you're using Outlook or some other tool. Yeah, that's acknowledging it. Doesn't mean you've done anything else with it, right?
Then you can go back and say, I know you got it. You haven't replied. I know you got it.
Feedback response. This is where you as the receiver then can say, okay, here's some feedback from what you've just told me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're full of baloney. I think that I agree.
Mm-hmm. I need more information.
I need more information. Here's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of way. All right. So that's the view of a basic communication model. And they have a picture on page 294 that talks about that. And you see in the picture there the noise, just in a graphical sense.
Sure.
Okay. Thoughts on any of that?
No, I like it. I drew a different kind of picture. Mine is prettier.
It's basically the same. You want to describe it?
Well, it's mine kind of has more of a feedback loop. It's prettier. It's round and not square.
Oh, yeah. This is a little less than artistic, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just a matter of style.
The other thing that I'll mention in this, and we've already talked a little bit about it, when you're having any communication, you really need to consider other things like, who am I communicating with? What is that audience?
Mm-hmm.
Are they speaking the same language as me?
Mm-hmm.
Are they in the same culture as myself? Unlikely they're going to have the exact same understanding of me just because we all have different perspectives.
You have to consider their frame of reference. Where are they coming at the message from?
That's right. And that's why as a sender, somebody that is sending the information out, you need to, it's really important to think through ways in which you can find out if the person that's receiving it is receiving the same information as you expected. And they understand. Again, they don't have to agree,
mm-hmm.
but you're transmitting information. So, okay. Communication methods. There are several different kinds of communication methods, but really they point out three different things. Interactive communication, that's where there's people talking back and forth and in a conversation. Yeah. There's the push communication. And if you think about this, this is like I'm going to send out a report. I'm going to push out the information to you. So maybe I have a project report that I'm sending out that communicates status of information. I'm pushing that out to everybody. Mm-hmm. And then there's pull communication. And that's where information is in a location. If you think about the internet, a lot of the internet is really a pull communication because as somebody browsing the internet, it's information that somebody has put out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I am pulling the things that I'm interested in.
You tell them where the information lives,
mm-hmm.
and they can go get it at their leisure.
Correct.
Right?
Another example are this podcast is a perfect example. That if people are interested, they can pull it down to themselves.
You don't send it to people. They go get it.
That's right. This is a pull communication.
All right.
Now, the next one is our meetings. Our favorite.
Our favorite.
And because I thought, once again, they were... This is an area that they could have really done a pretty good service.
More than two paragraphs?
Yeah, more than two paragraphs. You know, there are full books about how to hold effective meetings.
There is nothing worse than an ineffective meeting. People just walk away feeling, you know, deflated and discouraged and like it was a waste of their time.
There is an hour I'm never going to get back.
Yeah. So you can't underestimate the power of an effective meeting, and conducting an effective meeting is, again, a skill.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, just because I think that this is an area that I thought needed some more discussion, and I think that you do a good job in your meetings that you hold.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think that let's throw out a couple of things, the things that we can do to hold effective meetings.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think that it's really, here we're getting into our opinions, but this is called the Sensible Project Manager podcast
for a reason.
Because I believe that we need to talk about those things that are practical in sense, not just because it's in the book. Right?
Right.
Now, when it gets to the test, answer as the book says. You know, it's really important to, first of all, only hold a meeting if it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to throw out some ideas, and you throw out some ideas, too, things that you have found important. I like to only invite the people that need to be there. I don't like to invite people that have no need for the information that's going to be in the meeting. Or maybe I'll have, maybe it's more appropriate to have two different meetings if I have two distinct type of audiences in ways that I'm not going to waste people's time. I would much rather waste my time in what I'm talking about, communication and meetings, mm-hmm. than wasting a whole bunch of time. Because if mm-hmm. you think about, you get all the people in a room, you're burning a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
In a meeting, especially if you have, you know, like in our PMO meetings, we have 20, 30 people in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not effective, then you waste time.
Oh.
Let's see. I think it's really important to send out, not that I do this all the time, but it's really important to send out an agenda ahead of time so people know what they can expect in the meeting.
I don't always send out an agenda, but I always, like in our large group meetings, I always have an agenda that we review at the onset of the meeting so that we know what you can expect for that day. And it also helps you keep on track.
That's a great technique, is at the beginning of a meeting, you can run through the agenda so that they know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody hops up and gets out. Well, they didn't need it.
This doesn't
agenda.
Apply to me. I'm out of here. And that's okay.
And that's probably okay. Absolutely. Why waste your time? If you
Absolutely.
Don't and then meeting notes after that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that really depends on how formal that meeting needs to be. I don't send out meeting notes for every meeting that I have. But if it's a meeting that's going to require decisions that have to be made during the meeting, I will absolutely take notes or have somebody that will take, maybe a project coordinator or something like that can take notes while I'm running the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as a matter of fact, is one of the things that I find effective. If it's something that I do need to have notes and publish notes afterwards, and if I'm leading the meeting effectively, I don't think that I can take notes effectively while I'm leading it. So I'll have somebody else that can take the notes mm-hmm. and publish it afterwards.
You know what else I really like to do in those kinds of meetings where it's a very action-oriented meeting is before the group dismisses the meeting to review what the action items are that you determined in the meeting. Okay, so we said that Billy, you're going to go do this and you'll report back, and Susie, you have this action item takeaway, so that everybody walks away with a clear understanding of what the outcome of the meeting was.
That's a great thing to do. You're right. That is something that is really important.
I like that.
And then if I'm going to have a project meeting that's going to be reoccurring, those same action items that we had, we follow up as we go, but for sure by mm-hmm. the next meeting, whenever those action items were due,
mm-hmm.
make sure you follow up. And that might even be the very first item on our meeting agenda, is to say, okay, let's review our actions from last meeting.
Yep.
That in itself, that technique helps hold people accountable.
Oh, you bet. And it reduces confusion and who's doing what, who was asked to do what. It just helps to clarify for all members, because you can tune out in a meeting. I mean, and a lot of people do. So to kind of do that wrap up before they depart is a great way to just make sure everyone is on the same page.
Yeah, agreed. What other things that you can think of that have helped you in running an effective meeting?
Timelines. So we're going to give this section of the agenda this much time, and try your best to adhere to that time frame, so that especially if it's a meeting that's packed with agenda items, so that you can stay on track and make sure you hit all of those agenda items. So keeping track of time.
Yeah, good. Good.
Not always easy. But then you also have to be willing to address and say, let's take this offline. Or if a conversation is going down a bunny path or something, let's take this offline, or let's put that on the agenda for next week. Or you have to be willing to address those things so that you can stay on your schedule.
Perfect. And a lot of times when I'm in a meeting that I have, I know that there's going to be action items or a lot of discussion, and I know that I might have an audience that might potentially get sidetracked, I'll have parking lot.
A parking lot.
Absolutely. That's a great topic that's outside of the bounds of what this meeting intent of this meeting was.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put that on the parking lot. We'll address that. We'll figure out how we address that, or we'll hold that to the end of the meeting, mm-hmm. something along that line.
That's perfect. That's a great way to acknowledge that you're not just saying, no, I don't want to talk about that, but you can hold it for later.
That's right. And I would rather have somebody bring something like that up so that it can be addressed as opposed to having them hold it in.
Sure. They might forget what they were even... I don't know what I forget now what I was going to say. You know, but if you can put it down, it gets recorded.
One of the things you said, timelines, to tie into that, one of the things I think is really important is just because you've scheduled an hour meeting, if you've gotten to the end of your agenda, you've accomplished the goal of the meeting in half an hour, get out of there. You're done. Send them home. Give them an extra half an hour back.
Sometimes I'll even say that in the meeting invite, that we may not need the entire hour for this meeting, but these are the agenda items we're going to try to cover. And that kind of gives people a sense that, well, fabulous. If we do wrap up early, I'm going to get a half an hour of my life back.
If I could stay awake and participate,
sure,
we can
sure.
get it done faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teamwork.
There's motivation. Another thing is previous employment I've been at, I've been in a lot of different things. One of the managers I had previously, he really, this drives me nuts, when people are late to meetings. And, she's really going at it. So one of the things that he enacted, and this might work for some places and maybe not, he actually put a jar at the entrance of the door. And if you came in the room after the meeting started, you dropped money in that jar. And that really improved the timing. One of the previous places, I will not name the company, although it was a very prominent company that makes shoes. And every meeting, it drove me nuts. I'd call a meeting, people show up 10 minutes late. And just, I hated that. Wasted time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things. Promptness to a meeting by especially the person that's leading the meeting, but everybody promptness.
It can be cultural. It can be that or that environmental factor, right? It
yes.
really can be. It's, I don't think I should say anything else.
Okay. We've ranted about meetings. There we go. There was our opinions for that
section. Oh, yeah. That's a big one. Outputs.
Yeah, outputs. I did want to talk. I usually don't cover outputs unless I think it's really important stuff. I think there is a communication management plan that you can come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it could be, I've seen it as a full plan. Most of the time, I usually see this as a section in another portion, maybe a section that you add to your project management plan. Just depends on how you handle it, but some kind of plan. And it'll include all of the different things. I'm not going to go through this whole list, but do you see anything here that jumps out at you?
Well, you were talking earlier, Mark, about how this chapter fails to address a communication matrix. Is this where you would see it in the plan?
Yeah, absolutely. I would usually create, before we started talking, the communication matrix. Usually I like to see a list of, if not all of the individuals, at least the different roles and what that communication should be for each individual and or role
mm-hmm.
so that you know what you're talking about. So if I have an executive, I'm going to communicate to that executive about status of my project in a completely different way and a different level than I am going to be a team member.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason that executive needs to know all the details.
Right.
But I also have to understand the kind of information that executive needs to see.
What do they expect to see?
And communicate that.
Mm-hmm.
So communicating the right amount, and I think you said this, the right amount and the right level of communication, that goes a long ways. And mm-hmm. that's a skill that I think you learn as you understand and you get burnt a couple of times of what you...
I thought I sent that to you.
That's right. And I'm prescribed to doing the right amount of communication, not under communicating, not over communicating. A lot of people say over communicating is best. And really, you really have to read your organization and the individuals in it.
Over communicating can just lead to who cares?
1,000 emails in my unopened email box.
No. then you just go right to the, you get, then you know what they do? They create a rule and all of your emails just go somewhere else and they never see it.
That's right.
You know, because it's too much.
That's right.
But it might be a good idea to, you know, survey your project team and say, at some point during the project and say, so how are you feeling about the level of communication? Is there too much? Is there too little? What would you like to see? I don't think there's anything wrong with asking that question of your team.
Absolutely. And I think adjusting as you go along.
Absolutely.
That's the dynamics that you need to have during the, mm-hmm. the time. And the communication needs might change as time goes through.
You bet.
Great. Okay. Now, here we go. I thought this was going to be a lot shorter because there's so much fluff in here and it's really flying along. Okay. Next one is manage communications. Can you read that first sentence?
Managed communications is the process of creating, collecting, distributing, storing, retrieving, and the ultimate disposition of project information in accordance to the communications management plan.
So this is just the action of the plan that you put mm-hmm. together.
Doing it.
The inputs are the communications management plan, which we just talked about, work performance reports, enterprise environmental factors, and the organizational process assets. The output are the project communications.
Themselves.
You actually do that communication.
Mm-hmm.
Project management plan updates, which you might do from time to time. Project documents updates and organizational process asset updates.
Mm-hmm.
Let's turn. We're going to go to page 300 now. The tools and techniques. And this is another perfect example of how they underperformed on this one. Because I think what they're just saying for most of these is, hey, we talked about this in the project and in the communication plan section, execute those. Really. Because the tools and techniques are talking about the communication technology. Yes, we've talked about that and that's what you do.
Oh, yeah, I see. Described in section
10.1.2. and then communications models, which, of course, we've already done. This is just the taking that information we learned back then, and the communication methods. Now, one thing they do talk a little bit more about is information management systems.
Hmm.
Again, this is deciding how you communicate effectively for, again, your different audiences. Are you going to produce a hard copy of a report, for instance, or does that need to be an electronic copy? Can you send out a PowerPoint? Can you send out a status report that is electronic? Or can I maybe take that a status report and put it on a SharePoint site or some kind of website where people will then pull the information down mm-hmm. instead of being sent to their email address. So it just talks about those three different things, either hard copy, electronic communications, or electronic project management tools. So I'm in favor of those electronic project management tools because you can provide a lot of information and people can come and pull it down when they need it and it doesn't pile up in their email box.
Or having to come to you directly for that. Hey, could you send me that report, Mark?
Yes.
It's on the SharePoint site.
That's right.
You know.
Now, the disadvantage of that sometimes is that even though you publish it, you really, if there's some information in there that you want to make sure that they've heard and they're not thinking it's important so they don't even bother looking at it, I usually will try to distinguish that. Because if it's something that I think that it would, if they really have to know, especially if it requires some action items, I'm going to push them the information and rather than trying to rely for them to pull it down. So I think that the methods in which you use to communicate is going to be dependent on how important that information is, kind of what we talked about before.
I've worked at organizations before where they've had a paper memo, for instance, and you had to sign that you read it. Mm. You had to initial that you read it. It was that important to the organization so that you couldn't come back later and say, I didn't read that memo. Oh, yes, you did. Your signature's right there. Or, no, you didn't. Your signature's not on here. How come it didn't get to you?
Well, a perfect example of that, too, is if I have a controlling document, like a scope document or a mm-hmm. project management document that I need to get signed off, I will physically, if it's on paper, I'll physically take it around to the individuals and get them to sign it. Mm-hmm. Or if it's we have electronic method in which they can sign.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to show that we have to have something that says, yes, I read this, or at least I signed it, and I understand.
Yep.
So that's important. And then finally, the performance reporting. We're on page 301. Again, it's just there are a number of different ways that you can do reports. The thing that I would like to say about this really is, again, report at the appropriate level for each audience. And they say that in that first sentence of the second paragraph. Performance reporting needs to provide information at an appropriate level for each audience. That could mean, and when I put together my status reports, I usually like to do it once, but make it so that it can be consumable by multiple people. Sometimes that's kind of tricky. I might have in my report at the summary level that the executives might want to look, and then the details in lower portion of the report so that if they want to, they can look at it. Or if they're happy with that summary, they've read it and they're gone.
Yep.
And those people that need to have the details, they can dig into the details. So that's my preference on how I like to do it. I don't know if there's anything that you have found effective one way or the other.
No, I like that drill down capability. So if you provide one report that, like you say, it's summarized, but you have drill down capabilities, I think that's perfect. I like it.
Okay. There is, on the output section, we will talk about this real quick. I'm not going to talk about all of those. One I wanted to talk a little bit about, though, was number 4, which is organizational process asset updates.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be some things that get updated as a result of things that happen along the project. So here they talk about the stakeholder notification. So as things go through, we've talked a little bit about, there might be some notifications that go out there, and that notifications, those people you communicate to might change through the project. You might have to update who you're communicating to and the information or changes of the project that might happen. So project reports, definitely want to have the different, some formal and maybe even some informal reports. There might be some very specific ones you call out. Project presentations, very often project managers are having to put together presentations to describe where we are in status, depending on who the audience is. That's going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
Project records. Sometimes we have to keep track of specifics on how a project went so that if there's an audit later on or something like that, you want to make sure you have your project documentation in place. Next page, 303, there's feedback from stakeholders that this could be in the form of it talks even the next one, lessons learned documentation. As we are hearing, whether it's in the middle of the project where you're learning about things that they're concerned about, maybe it might require some changes in the project in the middle of the project, but it also might be a lessons learned at the end of the project. In an agile world, when you're doing those communications for what the equivalent of lessons learned, you do them as part of it. So they call them retrospectives in the middle of an iterative approach. So every 2 weeks, for instance, we will have a retrospective. So we always have a feedback loop on how things are going and what
Terrific.
Can be improved.
Build it in. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Control communications. she hears that in my voice.
Control communications is the process of monitoring and controlling communications throughout the entire project lifecycle to ensure the information needs of the project stakeholders are met.
Okay. The inputs to this process are the project management plan, project communications, issues logs, if there are any
issues. I'm bad at issues logs. I'm horrible.
Though you need to prove on that because that I think is one of the more important ones if there's problems. Work performance data. And organizational process assets. The outputs are work performance information, So we might be able to give information about how individuals are performing or how the project's performing. Any change requests, updates to the project management plan, project document updates, and organizational process asset updates. Let's go to the tools and techniques on, let's see, on page 306. Here again, they're talking about information management systems. So they seem to be doing a lot of repeating here. Again, it's just whatever those methods that you're using in communicating, storing information. This is where, you know, am I using email? Am I, you know, those ways in which we're going to use to communicate. Expert judgment, he's back again. That expert judgment, you're going to use your expert judgment on doing, on how you communicate. And the last thing are the meetings. We've talked about that quite a bit. So I think that winds up project communications. Thoughts about that? Other things that we should include here from a practical sense of view?
Well, aside from that matrix, I think the matrix is super important with a list of all your stakeholders on the left and the various types of communication that are going to take place on the in your column headers. I don't think you can underestimate that.
I agree.
And they talk about the issues log. I saw there the issues log will be discussed in section 13.
Ah, okay. So we will talk about that.
So I'm terrible at that. So I'm
now I'm thinking about that communication matrix. You said that you know who you're communicating to. If you do a good job in that communication matrix, which of course they did not include here, you can get agreement up front as to what information each individual or resource type needs to have.
Sure.
And that's, I think you're right, that is a really important thing to do. Because if you know, if you know what you need to communicate and how each person needs to receive that, then it should just run like clockwork.
Sure.
You just know what needs to be done, and then it's just executing it.
Yeah. Right. Like that.
Well, thanks, Terry.
Thank
again,
you, Mark.
Again, we're moving forward. We're getting closer and closer. So.
Yeah. Oh, now what's our next section is risk. Risky behavior.
Risk management is going to be a little bit more exciting. I think that's got some interesting concepts. So, yes, so read Chapter 11, Project Risk Management. We're getting close to the end.
Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, talk to you later.
Okay, Project Communication Management is in the bag. That is Session 10, and I hope your preparations, again, are going well for either the CAPM or PMP. And I hope these sessions are really helping you as you make those preparations. Now remember, check back at sensiblepm.com/CAPM10 for the show notes. Now next session, we'll be covering Chapter 11. That's going to be Project Risk Management. So if you want to brush up ahead of time, check out Chapter 11. At this point, we're almost done with these sessions. So if you have not done so already, make sure you get out there, get yourself scheduled to take this, either the PMP or the CAPM, whichever one you're preparing for. Don't delay. Get out there, get yourself scheduled, and then you'll be ready. Now, I'd like to ask again a favor from you. If you would just share this podcast and this set, especially this series, with other project managers that are preparing that you might know for either the CAPM or PMP, I'd really appreciate it. Also, if you wouldn't mind, go out to iTunes and give me a review. I'd love to be able to hear your feedback on what you think about this. All right, well, so that's the session for the day. Now remember, a sensible project manager always looks for a practical way to lead a project to success.
You've been listening to the Sensible Project Manager, Mark Phillippe, on the Sensible Project Manager podcast. To learn more about practical project management, visit us at sensiblepm.com.